Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, Tuesday has been rather unforgiving or less kind to local markets, with one of the more pronounced step backs for the Straits Times Index falling by about 1% at some point today. And there are now questions as to whether or not we might go from potentially breaching 3,000 on a wave of optimism to perhaps reality setting in and falling back towards 2,900, especially given the magnitude of how far the SAA has stepped back. We also want to take this opportunity to try and get more insights as to what various investors and fund managers are thinking about as we head deeper into 2021. So without further ado, on Money FM 89.3, we're joined today once again by Mr. Terrence Wong, founder and CEO of Azure Capital. He's here to join us to help us recap the month that was for markets, and also to ask him why he thinks markets have been a little shaky in the last couple of days. Terrence, thank you so much for joining us today. Happy New Year. Glad to have you on the show for the first time this year, and hope it's been a great start to 2021. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks so much, JP. Happy New Year.
All right. So again, we've had a pretty decent year, start to the year for local stocks. In fact, I think everybody might have viewed it as a pleasant surprise when they saw the STI test and breach that 3,000 level, that vaunted 3,000 level a number of times over the last couple of weeks. But now we're starting to see it actually take a significant step back, as we pointed out, the STI falling by about 1% in today's session. It seems that sentiment seems to have soured just a little bit in the last week of January. What do you think has changed this week as compared to the last couple of weeks when we saw the STI maintain some semblance of optimism? What are your thoughts as a seasoned investor, Terrence?
Well, I don't think very much has changed. I mean, if you recall, since November, the market has been pretty much on a tear. A lot of the big caps, the cyclical, started to make a very, very strong comeback. So right now, I think, and as we enter the earnings season, some investors or the investors would probably want to take a look at the number, take a peek at the numbers, as well as the outlook. Very, very importantly, I think, is they want to hear what the management has to say about what they feel the company is going to go through in the next 3 months, 6 months, and a year. And because before that, you know, it's all about buying on rumors. And as we get closer to the unveiling of the results, you know, that's a fact, right? And there could be a potential selling on fact.
And it's interesting you point that out, because we are in the midst of earnings season. Well, it's starting to warm up now. We've seen some of the REITs release their report cards. And I'd like to take this opportunity to ask you what you're expecting from this earnings season. But also, parents, another question that I've asked you on occasion during the COVID-19 pandemic: do earnings still matter in an era of loose money that's seen markets outpace the economic downturn and the economic reality? Or do you think that now is the time where perhaps fundamentals and earnings will actually matter more than it did, say, in the last couple of months?
Well, I remember in first quarter of 2020, just about, you know, 10, 11 months ago, markets were pricing in like what? Some Armageddon scenario, you know, like 40% decline for the whole of FY20. And this decline, I think, as the year progressed along, you know, past the circuit breaker period, you know, it was gradually trimmed throughout. And by year end, you know, analysts were only expecting a 20%+ decline in the index. Well, if the actual results actually underperform these expectations, well, I expect there to be a short-term profit-taking. However, you know, markets tend to be very, very forward-looking. And I believe that, you know, particularly for this year, investors will generally be more forgiving. And the market will pay more attention to the outlook for each respective company, as I mentioned earlier on, in view of the fact that, you know, 2020 is, they already know it's going to be a bad year.
Mm.
Right. So what if it goes down 35% instead of the 25% you're expecting? What is important is that the management will say that, oh, the orders are coming back, you know, and, you know, we are expecting the revenue to go up, you know, significantly more than what we had expected, you know, just 6 months ago. All these will go towards, you know, like buoying the sentiments of the stock. So whether or not the stock or the sector will perform really depends on what or the the outlook that the management has in store.
Interesting. One sector that perhaps has shown some early tremors this year, despite the relatively positive outlook from some of your peers in the investment space, is the property space, particularly the commercial property. And this is important not just for property developers, but also some of the REITs that recently released their earnings for this season. Terrence, what is your outlook for this, given the fact that we're seeing signs of a continued decline in rental rates for office spaces, partially related to the uncertainty surrounding COVID, and also how the virus or the pandemic has changed structurally changed demand for office spaces and the dynamics of work? Tell us what your outlook is, Terrence, and if this is still a sector that we'll have to worry about this year.
Well, structural is right, JP. You know, we have spoken at length. I remember last year, you know, no less than 3 interviews have we spoken about this office environment, you know, against the backdrop of still weak macro outlook. There's also the impact of work from home. I think when it comes to renewal, many of these tenants will probably look to downsize the units. And, you know, if you look at the office space, I think it will remain below its long-term average of 1 million square feet per annum this year, as well as next year. And importantly, I think that, you know, the rentals will decline by anywhere between 5% and 10% for this year. But of course, one upside catalyst could come in the form of, you know, we have been hearing that there's some tech giants that's going to relocate over here. So whatever the finance or financial sector, which has been one of the biggest tenants out there as they downsize, the tech giants will come in to take up part of the slack. But I think that there will still be a vacuum. It will still be on a slight downward trend looking ahead. And as COVID-19 has not really subsided, you know, the government is still strongly encouraging people to work from home as the default. I think that, you know, offices, as they try to renew their tenancy, will downsize.
Interesting thing that, if I can contrast office spaces, we've seen rental rates come down, Terrence, but then home prices, at least, and demand for private property itself or residential seems to have been rather steady, and some even showing some signs of stubborn growth. Why do you think there's been a bit of a divergence between these two particular sectors, Terrence? And is this going to be a theme that investors should probably watch out for in the property space? Perhaps there's a bit skeptical on commercial property, and perhaps just a little more positive on rental. Is it that simple, or is the outlook perhaps just a little too naive?
I don't think it's that simple, and I was really taken aback by the strength of the residential market. I still remember right after circuit breaker, people were just crazy. They were out there buying up, snapping up apartments, houses, and they are. I think an interesting observation is that they're looking at bigger units, and I haven't seen this since 2007. 2007, there was this really perverse period where the bigger units were sold at a higher PSF compared to the smaller ones. And right now, of course, we're not nowhere near that yet. But then I see an interest in people taking on, you know, bigger properties because, you know, for the fact that they are working from home. And they are thinking, oh, if this is going to be a structural change, if it is going to be somewhat semi-permanent, you know, I need a bigger place in my house, or I need a defined area where I can work, where my kids can actually, you know, or a study area where my kids can actually do a home-based learning. So I see interest for bigger units coming through. But that said, I think that it is still strange to see the private home prices rising, you know, fairly significantly. We're talking about 2.1% in the fourth quarter, and that's the steepest quarterly increase since 2Q 2018. And this is, you know, on the back of our economy actually like shrinking 6%, and unemployment rate hitting, you know, close to 4%. I would think that, you know, the government has really like sounded some alarm bells, and I'll be a little bit careful. You know, we don't want to hit get into a point where, you know, the government have to come in with more cooling measures.
Mm. Interesting. Terrence, there's been an interesting development also early this year, and I don't know if you noticed it. A couple of weeks ago, there was a report that the SGX is considering allowing special purpose acquisition vehicle companies, or SPACs, to list here. Some see this as potentially bolstering capital markets activity, especially given how popular they've gotten during the COVID-19 pandemic out on Wall Street. But the one concern I have personally is that could there be a scenario where these SPACs were allowed to list companies more effectively on the SGX, could there be regulatory lapses that could allow some substandard companies to list and thus introduce some market risk into the markets? You're a seasoned investor and you've probably forgotten more about SPACs than I ever learned. Talk to us about what you think about the risks and the benefits, or if the benefits outweigh the risks in allowing SPACs to list here in Singapore, given how successful they've been in the US, and if the risks perhaps are a little bit overblown.
Well, I have the fortune. I don't want to call it fortune. I've actually had the fortune of investing in a SPAC or seeing it from start to finish.
Interesting.
This SPAC actually listed in 2019, so it was way before the fever in 2020, and the deal was consummated about 18 months later in October 2020. So I went through the whole process, and I do have a good feel of what it is. First up, I mean, if you look at 2020, remember I said it's feverish, right? There were, mm-hmm. I think, like 250 SPAC IPOs worth, you know, raising about $80 billion. Put it in the context, that is more than all the capital that was raised in previous SPAC IPOs combined, you know, since the birth of SPAC. So in 2020 alone, we have more than all the years combined. And these guys are known as blank check companies. Really, there's no business operations, purely cash. So they raise the cash, they go out there, they look for interesting acquisition targets. One of the good things about it is that I think the acquisition target really has to negotiate with only one party. And if the sponsor of the SPAC says okay to the price, you know, the deal should be fairly smooth. And you just run through the whole process. And I think that SPAC proponents really claim that, you know, the phenomenon of pricing of a typical IPO below their market price, so-called the IPO underpricing, incurs an unnecessary opportunity cost for the company going public. So that is one of the good things about SPAC. But of course, there are also some cons. I think it's largely like what you mentioned, it really revolves around the quality of the companies, because, you know, it's not for the public to decide whether there will be a consummation of such a deal. It is all down to the sponsor, and the sponsor goes through, and that's why over the years we've seen, like, you know, at least half of the SPAC the SPAC IPOs underperforming the market. Mm. And that's because, you know, they have the consummation of the deal, the companies are actually, you know, inferior. They start to see declining numbers. So it tends to be weak. But I think in recent times, with this SPAC explosion, they're really out there looking for quality companies. But with so much money being raised, let's say in the US, so much money being raised, and the good deals are only, you only have that number of good deals, right? Chasing that number of good deals. And you're also like fighting with the private equity. And I feel that there will be more implosions when it comes to SPAC issues, especially in the US. So now they're also looking, you know, overseas, to Southeast Asia, to China, you know, to basically overseas business, not so much to China, but overseas businesses. So if we were to create a SPAC here, we really have to compete, you know, vie against the likes of the US SPACs.
Interesting outlook there. And finally, Terrence, I did want to get your thoughts on the upcoming budget. We talk about these things that markets are looking forward to here, and perhaps none bigger than the budget, especially after all that spending that was outlaid last year to try and support businesses during the COVID-19 pandemic. Very quickly, Terrence, what are you looking out for in this year's budget in terms of how it might guide your investment decisions moving forward, especially if you head deeper into this year?
Well, I expect the stimulus to be dished out for this year. That there will still be some stimulus, but it will be very, very targeted on the still hard-hit sectors, the low-income households. And they will be, I think that if you look at who will be, I would say beneficiary, who would get the bulk of this will be, like I mentioned, the hard-hit sectors in aviation and hospitality, and some of them will be in the retail sectors. Many of the temporary measures such as rental waivers, you know, tax rebates, loan deferments, foreign worker levy waivers are likely to be extended as government will also try to reduce the deficit sustained over the previous year. So overall, I think the help will still be in place, but firepower won't be similar to last year. In fact, I hope never, ever to see the government fire another $100 billion.
Terrence Wong, CEO and founder of Azure Capital, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.32. Share with us your thoughts on how the first month of the new year went for markets and what you're looking forward to in the next 11. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times and a prosperous 2021 ahead. Happy Tuesday, sir.
Thanks so much, JP.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.